start with homework three. So I'll just flip through the questions, and if you have a question about one of them, let me know. This is the first one. We've seen stuff like this on the other homework, so this shouldn't be too much of a surprise. But if you don't want to know it, feel free to ask. All right. This we talked about in class. Then we had a homework question on it, but I think a lot of people had trouble with it. So this is another chance to get it. Yes?
I'm sorry, I missed the first one. I wanted to ask you about that one.
Sure, there it is.
Yeah. So you were just saying you want A to be less than B, and if it is, you put true or false?
If A is less than B, you put true, and if it's not, you put false.
Okay, I just wanted that
question. No, I didn't mean anything hard. Just fill in the truth table.
Okay.
I think in the beginning of the semester, this was considered to be very hard for people, and I think now everyone's getting much more comfortable.
Yeah, now like this.
Yeah, so this is, it's okay. So, I'll give you an easy one.
Okay.
This one could also be easy, depending on...
Just write an expression.
Yeah. All right, so we talked about expression trees, these structures where you have something at the top, like and or not, or a variable, and then sub-branches with sub-trees representing the expression. So I gave you the expression. This is just me blathering on. This is really what I'm asking about. Here's the expression, D equals block. And draw the expression tree for that formula. Now, if you're doing this, since you're doing this electronically, you're not actually drawing it, you could draw it on a program and attach it.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Always nice to, I feel like I'm close to Bill Gates when I do this. If you don't have a drawing program, you don't want to do that in a drawing program. Another way to do it is with ASCII characters. If you've ever done that, you make little pictures with, you write space, N-O-T, space, and you put slashes, forward slash or backward slash to be little branches of the tree. Anyway, you shouldn't have too much trouble drawing it. It's not a huge tree. Just make it so that that we can at least read what it is that you have. Okay? Just make it equivalent to the expression that I gave. There's a tree now. So given that you've gotten a tree, what am I asking for here? Convert. Okay, so I want you to convert this into the machine language that I invented, ML3. And at John's urging, and I think this was a very good suggestion, instead of just saying, go for it, I did it myself and then took some of the parts and covered them up with boxes and said, fill in what is missing here, what goes here. And if you actually go through the lecture number 9, I think it is, compilers, it gives a procedure by which you start off with an expression like not A or B, and step by step you turn it into smaller and smaller and smaller expressions until you get down to individual statements of machine code, like N equals accumulator equals B, something equals accumulator or N, C equals something. You just have to figure out what these somethings were if you were to carry out the whole conversion procedure. I did get one question by email. No, sorry, this is on the next one. This one. So in this one, now I took that same statement, I converted it into different machine language code, just three statements, make it smaller. And what I'm asking you to do is convert each of these into the bit codes. They're little 7-bit codes, like 0101100, assuming I have a 7, corresponding to these three statements. So there should be 3 7-bit codes, 3 numbers is the answer. One for this one, one for this one, one for this one. And what someone sent me mail about was that one of the slides describing how the numbers relate to these statements is wrong. It gets or and switched. Another of the slides is correct. But really what you need to do is if you run this program, this ml3c.py program, then type in the code that you think is the right code, it'll actually tell you what the statement is corresponding to that code. So if you have it backwards, you'll see that the statement will come out different than you expect, in which case you follow the wrong slide. I have it fixed now in my version. I can send out a revised one.
So wait, you wanted to just figure out where A, B, and C goes?
No. So. Let me actually run the program, because I think I need it for the next. Yeah, I need it for this next one anyway. All right, so if you run this program, it doesn't quite all fit on the screen. That's okay. what you'll see is statements like this, like A equals accumulator. This statement is encoded inside this little fake pretend computer as a bit sequence, 1100000, which in decimal is the number 96. What this program lets you do is, say you bring your mouse over to this one and you type in, I don't know, like 11, and hit enter, it actually will show you, oh, 11, that's this in binary, and this is the statement corresponding to 11. So if you have a statement in mind and you think you know what the code is for it, type it in here, hit enter, and it'll tell you whether or not it agrees with you.
Oh, so you just want to find the number that matches the code.
Exactly. Okay. In fact, one or two of them might actually be on here already. I'm not sure. Like if I asked particularly about, what about accumulator equals not E, your answer would be 52, because that's the code that would give you that statement.
Okay.
And the slides in the notes actually describe how you take a statement and turn it into a sequence of bits. So it's not just, they're not just random numbers, right? It's figure outable. But if you feel really confused about it, you can at least try to figure out the pattern from this. And the last question just says, all right, now here's a program. Actually, let me get rid of this statement here. Here's a program. If we hit the cycle button, the little red rectangle is going to step down and execute each of these statements one after the other. So if you hit it 32 times, it'll go through all the statements and then go back to the beginning again. And the question is, what did that do? You look at the values that are stored in A, B, C, and D, is that what it was? That's the first four bits, right? And look to see how they change. So right now it says 1110 on A, B, C, D. If we cycle all the way through, those numbers are going to change to something else. Try to figure out what the pattern is. And I actually gave you a couple, well, let me flip back to the homework now. Right, so this was number 5. You want to figure out the codes for those three statements. And number 6 was, all right, run this program. First run it with A set to 1, B set to 0, C set to 1, D set to 0. Go all the way through, see what you get. Just write down the answer. So that shouldn't take any thinking. You just have to follow the instructions. Do the same thing with another sequence. A is 0, B is 0, C is 1, D is 1. See what you get. And now extrapolate. Say, all right, if the first pattern gave us this is the answer, the second pattern gave us this is the answer, what could this thing be doing? And you can test yourself by actually starting up again, clicking on A, B, C, and D to get the pattern that you want, hitting cycle 32 times, and see if it changed the way you expected. And you know, we could give hints if you feel really stumped about it. But don't ask for hints until you at least, you know, count out what these codes give you. Right, what does 0011 do after you hit cycle 32 times? All right, any other clarification questions on homework 3? You have enough to get going on that? Cool. Oh, yeah, and the extra credit was write a Python program to print out song lyrics.
Have you figured out how many points it's going to be worth?
We've been doing 100 for each homework. So we're making all the homeworks equally weighted. Oh, is that right?
So like
yes,
if the homework's 100, this, how much is the credit
going to
be though?
Oh, how much is the extra credit worth?
Yeah.
Probably, let's see, there were 6 questions on this.
Probably be half a grade.
Half a... Or half of one of those 6. Yeah, so basically it's equivalent to half of one of the other 6 questions.
Okay.
All right, so that was homework 3. Homework 2. Everybody's handed in, I think, at this point. If you haven't handed it in, it may be too late. So here are the answers. Let's see. All right, first question is, what is the decimal number 113 in binary? So we're trying to convert 113 to binary. The largest power of 2 that is smaller than this number is 64. So we're going to have a binary number that's going to have something in the 64 place, something in the 32 place, something in the 16 place, the 8 place, the 4 place, 2 place, 1 place. We have 1 here, leaving us with 49, does that work?
3, 3, 1, 1.
Yeah, okay. Leaving us with 49, which that means there's a 32 in it. Let's take the 32 out. 17, that means there's a 16 in it. Leaving 1. So no 8s, no 4s, no 2, and a 1. So the answer is 1110001. I think. Alright. The next question is, what is 101, 10010 in binary, or sorry, in decimal? (coughs) 101, 10010. So this is the 1's place, the 2's place, the 4's place, the 8's place, 16, 32, 64, 128. So we have a 2, we have a 16, that's 18 altogether so far, we've got a 32, that's 50 altogether so far, and we've got a 128, that's 178 altogether. So that should. I'm doing these on the fly, so I'm hoping the answers are actually correct.
Yes.
All right, and the last one is to add two numbers in binary. I'll do that on the side. Oh, it's nice and clean over here, too.
It was
kind of
hard to do this one, like writing it.
Why? Oh, because it's writing the carries?
Yeah.
So you'd be typing it in.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's easier to sometimes just have a sketch pad, which I don't expect anyone to have. 1011. I can show you how I would have done it. 1011 0010 plus 00111 010. So I put a little blank space here and put a bunch of dashes. All right, now we've got 0, and the carry here is 0. You can just type it right above on the same line. 0 plus 1 plus 1 is 0 carry the 1. 1 plus 0 plus 0 is 1, carry 0. 0 plus 0 plus 1 is 1, carry 0. 0 plus 1 plus 1 is 0 carry the 1. 1 plus 1 plus 1, ooh, that's 1, carry the 1. 1 plus 0 plus 0 is 1, carry the 0. 0 plus 1 plus 0 is 1, carry the 0. Check.
We're going to have the first 0 of the product. Or the sum.
This one here? Yeah, leading zeros can always be elided. Unless I say explicitly, give me an 8-bit number, which I did, so don't worry about it. I just being explicit. Alright, so number one. Moving on. Alright. So Monica graded these, and she sent me, she always brings to my attention the most unexpected answers, we shall say. And so I always saw a bunch of unexpected answers. I'm not sure if anybody connected with this question at all, but let me at least tell you what it is I was getting at. Notice that this is not tagged with on the exam question. This was just a, try to think about a question. All right. The number 41 in binary is 101001. First, if you needed to multiply it by 16 in your head meaning without a whole lot of work, and you can choose to report the answer in decimal or binary, which would you choose and why? Now, some people said, I would choose decimal because I understand decimal and I don't understand binary. That's not really what I was getting at. What I was getting at is the number 16 in binary is a 1 in the 16 place followed by 0, 0, 0, 0, right? Four zeros. When you multiply a number in binary by 2, it's just like when you multiply something by 10 in decimal. You just stick a 0 at the end. It shifts everything over. Okay? So if you stick 4 zeros at the end of this number, you get that number times 16. Because you double it 2, 4, 8, 16. So the answer of multiplying this number by 16 is 10100100000. 4 zeros afterward. Didn't have to write anything down. Multiplying this by 10 is a bit... Oh, sorry. Multiplying 41 by 16... Probably a lot of people could do that in their heads, but it certainly requires a lot more thought than just repeating the number and saying 0000. So that was what I wanted you to notice. On the other hand, if you have to multiply it by 100, multiplying the binary number by 100 is a bit of a pain. However, multiplying 41 by 100 in your head is easy. You just say 4100. You just put two zeros after it, that multiplies it by 100. So that's what I was getting at. That certain mathematical operations are easier in one base than another. And it depends a lot on what exactly you're doing. So some people might say, oh, well, binary is easier. No, decimal is easier. Binary is easier. Just don't worry about that. That's just not true. It depends what you're doing. If you're always multiplying things by 10, it's really great to have the numbers in decimal. Right? If you're multiplying by 16 or halving or whatever else you might be doing, then binary is much more convenient. Yeah.
I think that if you multiply by power of 2, you figure out what the number is.
Yes, and explicitly in this case, let's see, if you needed it, and before, how would you, which would you choose and why, right? So I didn't actually tell you, I didn't ask explicitly, tell me what the answer would be. Just said, and so, right, multiplying by 2 in binary is easy because you just stick a 0 at the end. That's, yeah, and on any power of 2. So that sounds good to me. Yeah.
When you said about multiplying by 16 or between the zeros, you could put 4 zeros at the end between 16.
Yeah.
So, like, if you wanted to multiply that number 41 times 8, you would just stick 3 zeros at the bottom?
Yes. The bottom meaning the end, the right side. That's right. Pretty slick. Just like if you wanted to multiply 41 by 1,000, you stick 4 zeros, or 3, sorry, 3 zeros after. Okay. Next question. I really wanted to make you watch the video again here in class too, but I didn't actually do that. So, all right, so I was hoping that people would watch the video again, and maybe it would make more sense this time. Not that I expected it not to make sense last time, but you might have thought, that's odd, the guy's on drugs. But really, there's a whole lot of structure going on in here. So just to see if you had watched it, although he could get to 255, how high does the octopus actually count in the video? He starts counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and he actually gets up to 48, and then he stops. So that was what I was looking for. Some people said other numbers, and I wasn't sure why. Yeah, maybe you can tell me.
233.
Yeah, 233.
I think you're making consecutively, though.
Yeah, when I say count up to, I mean do, right? Like, if I just stood in front of you and said 10,075, you wouldn't say that I counted up to 10,075. But yeah, I understand. I'm sure that Monica gave partial credit for picking a number that was in the video as opposed to just making up something random.
These questions are, like,
I may have worded them badly, and I'm always trying to be better at that.
Like something to clarify, but you don't know that when you're like at home doing homework.
Yeah, sure, I understand. Even from home, but yeah, I mean, it would be nice to have the questions clear enough that that wouldn't be necessary. No, I appreciate that. I really do try, this is never the first. I never send you the first version of any of these questions. These have all been worked over. Can you imagine how good they were when they started out? All right, right? Because at first I didn't even say 255. I just said, how high does he actually count in the video? And they're like, 255. You know, he certainly says it. He can count that high. No, I mean not 255. The other one. All right, and this clearly was not easily understood. Oh, but I did give the hint. See the glossary from homework 1, question 4. So, each of the octopus's tentacles was how much? Well, no, I mean like. It was either a 1 or a 0. Each one was a 1 or a 0. Each one was a bit.
Bit.
Yeah, thank you. and he had 8 of them. He has 8 tentacles. So he's a byte. An octopus is a byte. So one of the reasons I thought it was so clever to put an octopus as the thing in the video to be counting is that octopuses have 8 tentacles and bytes have 8 bits. And it just seemed very computerish. But anyway, there you go. So I was going for a byte there, but I think there was a lot of alternate possible answers that people gave. All right, this question was just basically applying the 2's complement, which was described in the lecture notes. So 2's complement is really simple. We've got this, what is this, an 8-bit number? Is that right? Yeah. So if you have a number, like x equals 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 1. To compute the 2's complement, you do 2 things. First, you flip the bits. And that means turning the 0's to 1's and the 1's to 0's. Okay? Then, step 2 is you increment this, or add 1 to the answer. So if you add 1 to this, in this case it's 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 0, 1. Okay? So this should be part A, the 2's complement. What do you notice about your answer to part A? Oh, sorry, B. Oh, now take the 2's complement of the result from part A. Oh, okay. Alright, well we just did that. Let's do it again. Step 1, flip all the bits. 0's to 1's, 1's to 0's. Okay? Step two, add one to the result.
0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 0, 1, 1.
So this is the answer to B. This is A, this is B. Part C, what do you notice about your answer to part B? It was the answer to part B. Is there anything else to notice? Wait, yes, indeed. You might have noticed this, you might not have noticed it. It's the same thing we started with. It's that bit pattern again. We took the 2's complement, we got a bit pattern, we took the 2's complement again, and we got the first bit pattern back again. I think people did notice that. But now part D, do you think it's a coincidence? A lot of people said, no, it's not a coincidence, but had a lot of trouble explaining why it worked out this way. The one person said, yes, I think it's a coincidence. Which is, you know, that was you, which is, Monica liked that because she found it very refreshing. Because I think she thinks a lot of people had no reason to think it wasn't a coincidence and just were afraid to admit it. So you at least admit it. But it turns out it's not a coincidence at all. This number is 3 in decimal. This number corresponds to -3. Right? 2's complement is kind of like taking the negative of a number. So if you take the negative of a negative, you get the number back again. And 2's complement actually does the right thing that way. So that's one way to understand it. I don't know if that's what she gave full credit to or not, but the other way to understand it, what helped me understand why this actually happens, is what is flipping the bits do to a number? It turns out that it actually, if you have some number x and you flip the bits on it, if it's an 8-bit number, it's actually, the answer is 255 minus x. Take a bit pattern, flip its bits. The new answer is that you get is exactly 256 minus that number. If you add 1 to that number, if you add 1 to this, what do you get? It's 256 minus x. Okay. Now what if we take the 2's complement of this number? 2's complement of this number, we'll call it y. The 2's complement is, again, it's going to be 256 minus y, which is what? 256 minus x. Equals 256 minus 256 minus minus x is x. So we took the 2's complement twice and we got the original number back. So anything from 2's complement is really like taking negation, therefore taking it twice should get you back the original answer. That would make me happy. A more detailed analysis like this would be great, but I wasn't expecting that. Mostly I was thinking that you would notice that the negative and negative is the original number. But this, knowing how to take this, take a bit pattern and turn it to its 2's complement, that I would ask on the test. These other things are more thought-provoking questions. All right, Noel. So this is that the Christmas program. What does it say to do now? Type in program 1 in words. In what pattern does it make the lights flash? Ah! All right, not B and not C. Actually, does anybody have this written down someplace so I don't have to swap back and forth? Oh, that's not so bad. A and not C. Not A, and B and C. C is B and not C. B and not C. All right. Then the lights. Oh, can I just do this? That would be nice. What's that? This question or the... Light 3. Light 4. All right, did I do everything now? Okay, all right. So I asked people to describe what they see. Right, what I was hoping you would describe is basically a bouncing ball that's going down four steps and up four steps, up and down like that.
I just said all the colors are changing.
All the colors are changing?
And then I said what was happening to A, and then like A, B, and then B.
Yeah, but I was asking about the light, I'm asking about the circles. Yeah, so the circles are flashing, and they're not just flashing, right? They're flashing in a pattern. It's going up.
Yeah, real fast.
And then down. Okay, that's what I was looking for.
And then I wrote what was flashing on A and B and C.
Okay, that's sort of not.
Okay.
I was asking about the lights, but if you added extra stuff, I'm sure that's not fun. I think it's sort of cute. You can actually make the lights do this, go up and down like that. In fact, another version of the problem had two balls. One was coming up and the other was coming down. They were sort of passing through each other. Anyway, it was more I left it like that. All right, so I think that the question was, you know, what do you see? And the answer should be something like the ball goes up and down. Ball goes up, ball goes down. Yeah, all right. B, all right, yeah, so this is what I heard. That was hard. All right, type in program number 2 written on the page after the next page. Find a formula for the light so that they're on for 3 seconds, then off for 1, then on for 3, then off for 1, and so on. So let's look at what program 2 is supposed to be. Should be false. It's hard to read. Not B equals C. And not C. So interesting that I left half the program 1 on. You see what it's doing now? Back to the top. Sort of interesting. All right, so the point is, what can we notice here? If you look at the B and the C, these yellow lights, they're going in a pattern of 4 things. BC, nothing. C, B, BC, nothing. B, oops, sorry, C, B, BC, nothing. C, B. So it's you know, 4 beats, right? It's a pattern of 4. If you want the lights to be on for 3 beats and then off for 1 beat, then all we need to do is notice, say, when both lights are on or both lights are off. And we'll have it turn off in that case. So if we did something like this, not B and C, and we just give them all the same expression. This is one of many possible ways to accomplish this. All right, let's see what we got. So it should be 1, 2, 3, off. 1, 2, 3, off. 1, 2, 3, off. All right. So basically, all we need to do is type an expression that's false for one of these patterns and true for the other ones. B or C would have worked as well. That would have been less to type. That's a slightly different pattern now, but it's still ultimately going to be 3 on, 1 off. No, it's not. It's going to be 2 on, 2 off.
No, it's not B or C.
Not B or C. So that's just pretty much, no, that should be on for 3 beats. No, this should work. On, off, on, off, on, off. Yeah, okay, so it's on for 3 beats and off for 1. That also works. All right, that was homework 2. Any other questions, clarification, before I move on to the next thing? What's the next thing? Next thing is I wanted to play the end of that interview. Actually, why don't we do clicker questions first? We'll play people out.
long as you forgot your clicker.
What's that?
As long as you forgot your clicker.
What if you forgot your clicker? You can borrow one of mine.
I know my clicker number.
I don't think that will help you. But do you actually know the code on the back?
Oh yeah.
Did you write it down?
Yeah. Will this work?
So what I have to do is send an email saying,
you
use the guest clicker. I know which one it is. The one that doesn't have my initials on the back.
Okay. Thank you.
Is that going to be what we? No, because I only have the two. And unless you get every question right, you can use mine, but you have to get every question right.
Okay.
Send me mail saying that you attended, and I'll at least get you in the on the board for that. So you won't get credit for the questions because I won't know what you would have answered, but. The majority of the points comes from that. Okay. All right, so this is, I wanted to remind you a little bit about the little Python sampler that I gave last time. So, let's see. So here's a little snippet of code. We assign x to something, we assign y to something, we assign z to something, and then we print x plus y like that, plus z in quotes. And the question is, what will this print in Python? Stop in a minute, not before. Four, three, two, one.
There's 20 more people.
Plus me.
Okay.
And somebody doesn't have a clicker. All right. Anyway, we could be getting deleted from the other class. All right. So what does this actually do?
This place is my job.
All right. So the first statement says x gets eggs. So x has the value of x, which is a string. Then y equals x. And notice that x is in quotes, so it is the letter x and not the value of the variable x. Z, on the other hand, is the value of the variable x, which in this case is x. Okay. Then what do we print? We're going to print the x, which is x, plus y, which is x, plus z in quotes, meaning literally the letter z, not the value of z. So it should be eggs x z, which is z. Which, we have a nice kind of bell curve around that. Nobody picked a. Oh, that's good. All right, any questions about that? It's just a question of kind of being careful. Yeah, go ahead. So when things are in quotes, it means literally that sequence of letters. If things are not in quotes, then it actually looks up the value of whatever it is. You know, it actually computes the value of the expression. So in this case, this is referring to x, the variable x, which we said had the value x. So now we're assigning z the value x. So when we go to print things, we're printing the value of x plus the value of y plus the letter z, because it's in quotes. Yeah.
If it wasn't in quotes, it would be x. It would be x x x.
If the z weren't in quotes?
Yeah.
Yeah. If we did the sequence here and then we said print x plus y plus just plain old z, then it would be
x x
eggs x eggs.
Okay.
Which I made them sound similar just to confuse you. Not you personally. Yeah. Do you want more like this?
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. That's a great idea. Especially considering that we have. Yeah, only about half people got that, and some of them got it by accident. But others missed, others had the right answer and they got it wrong by accident. So there's accidents happening in all directions. All right. So, all right, what if we do... here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do one at the Python prompt. So we'll actually type Python code, and then I'll ask one of the questions as a multiple choice. This way you get actual points for it. Whoa. What the heck? What happens if I click on one of these? That! I turn red. Oh! Am I telling it the right answer? Yes! Interesting. Okay, anyway. Living and learning as we go here. All right,
is it big enough to read?
Probably could use a little bit bigger. Act. All right, great. All right, so, I don't know. So, Monday equals good. Okay, so print Monday prints good. It seems to be in echo mode. Sorry about that. It might be helpful to not have it look like that. All right, so I typed Monday equals good. Whatever's on the left side of the equal sign is a variable. So Monday is a variable, and we're storing in it the value good, that actual string. Now, what happens if I type Tuesday equals bad? What do you think that's going to do? I heard error, and I heard something about Tuesday. It could print Tuesday. And why error? What would the error be? Because bad, right now bad is not in quotes, bad is just it's saying bad is a variable, look up its value. There's no such variable yet. So it can't store the value of bad into Tuesday. And in fact, ignoring all the obnoxious stuff that it says, it boils down to name bad is not defined. We don't have a variable called bad yet. All right, but we can say Tuesday equals bad in quotes, that's fine. Because now if we print Tuesday, it prints bad. But if we print Tuesday in quotes, it prints Tuesday. It's just like when people use the air quotes, right? They mean literally the word as opposed to what the word means. It's the same kind of thing, right? So I could say I'm at a loss at the moment. I'm drawing a blank. Or I could say I'm drawing a blank. Literally, no, I don't think that's really what I'm getting at. All right,
you use the air quotes when you're saying it.
I'm drawing. Well, that's not quite right, is it? When do people use air quotes? It's usually a little sarcastic too.
And I don't own a toothbrush.
What's that? What is that from?
I think Tom did. I don't know.
I don't own a toothbrush. Yeah, that he would sometimes use air quotes completely inappropriately, and that was part of the humor. So all right, well, so maybe air quotes. Maybe don't think about this as air quotes because you won't know what you're doing. All right, print three. It prints string three. If I say print three, it's going to try to find a variable called three, which doesn't exist, so it's going to get unhappy. If I say print three, it's printing three the number. If I say print three, it looks like the same thing, but it's actually not. This is basically the word three, not the word three, but the character sequence that looks like three. This is actually the number three. So in particular, we can say things like print three plus one. What will that print? Four. Because we're talking about actual three and actual one, and we add them together. On the other hand, we could say, what's three plus one? What's three as a thing? As a string, as a drawing, as a sequence of characters, plus one as a sequence of characters. My son used to actually do arithmetic this way. That would be 3, 1, which is not 4, right? Okay, maybe that didn't really help anything. Let's see. So word equals uh,
let's try this. Let's say word equals French. W, print W is French. If we say print W from 1 on, it prints wrench. If we say print, the letter W concatenated with the rest of the variable W from 1 on, we get wrench.
Right? Because what did it do? It put the string W and it stuck onto the end of it. Whatever was in the variable W, which is French, starting from character 1 to the end, in other words, wrench. So it took the W, stick it for wrench. You can play the game from, do people watch Electric Company or is that that's too old to go? What did you guys watch when you were learning how to put words together? Sesame Street? Okay. But did they do that on Sesame Street? No, that was the Electric Company. They have these two faces in profile, and one would say puh, and the other would say ack, puh, ack, pah, ack, pah, pah, and then the word pack would appear between them. So you could do that, right? That's sort of what I did with French. P plus act. It puts them together. Pat. All right. Start equals say cherry, end equals pi, start plus end, or sorry, print start plus end, cherry pi. All right? None of that shows up on the podcast. All right, so some people wanted to see more. So yeah, do you have something that I could take?
Just a question, just not something tight, but you have 3 plus 1 and 2 separate sets of parentheses. If you put it in one set of parentheses, would it just print?
Oh, good. You mean once in quotation marks, you mean, right?
Yeah,
like this. Is that what you wanted?
Yeah.
Good. What do you think it's going to be?
3 plus 1.
Like 3, symbol 3, symbol plus sign, symbol 1. Boom. Yeah. Right. Very good.
I like it. Without any quotes, you get 4. With quotes around the individual things, you get them stuck together. And with the quotes around the whole thing, you get the plus sign, too. Because the plus sign is quoted now.
All right, so I need to make up one to try. All right, so what if we say x equals eggs, y equals x, z equals x, print x plus y plus z. You know, the suspense is killing all of us. So, can I use the same choices from last time?
Yes.
No.
No.
I don't think the answer to that. I just have to put on choice F. Just add an F to your clicker. All right, let me ask one that actually on this list here. Okay, all right.
So if I hit enter, what is this going to print? Is it x plus y plus z? Eggs plus y plus z, or x, eggs, y followed by y followed by z. Eggs, 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 everyone loves eggs. Eggs, x, z, eggs, x, x.
All right, we'll get points for this one. More seconds. 5, 4. Okay. All right.
Did you answer?
What's that?
Yeah.
So let's, we'll hit enter and see what it says.
Eggs, eggs, eggs. Why? Because what is it going to print? It's going to print the value of the variable x, which we said was eggs, followed by the string eggs, so it says eggs a second time, followed by the value of the variable z, which in this case we said was whatever x was at that time, which was eggs. So we got eggs, eggs, eggs.
Oh, so here's something a little bit trickier. But what happens if we do this? A equals 71, or 71. B equals A. A equals 32.
Wait,
print.
I have a question.
Yeah.
In the question, just say, does it say print whatever, whatever, and then Z in quotes? It did.
You're right. But the question I was asking is, what would this print? Which doesn't have the Z in quotes. You're right. I reused the other question, but just for the choices, not for the question. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
It's hard to ask a question that's sufficiently clear without saying everything. Sorry. I understand your misunderstanding.
Okay.
Not that that helps you at this point. All right. So what will this do? What will this print? The obvious choices would be 32 or 17, or error, or the letter B. In this case, the B is not in quotes, so it should look up whatever the value of B is. And what's the value of B? Go ahead.
71.
And why 71 and not 32? Because we said B is equal to A.
Yeah, but doesn't A go in order?
Yes. So that's the important bit, that it goes in order. So these are not like algebra kind of sentences that say, oh, A is equal to 71 for all time. B is equal to A for all time, and A is equal to 32 for, well, as soon as that, we'd already be screwed up, because then 71 would equal 32. What this is really doing is it's saying, take 71, store it in A, take whatever's in A right now, which is 71, and store it in B. Now, you can change A, but B is still whatever it was. Okay? So that's,
so yeah, so the answer here should be 71. All right, moving back to the clicker questions.
So here we define a function d that takes in some value, calls it w, and returns some modification of it. This is a dash in quotes. These are plus signs. Now we're asking, what will this print? If we say print d, applied to the word hubba. Do we get nothing? Do we get hubba? Do we get hubba hubba? Do we get hubba hubba hubba? Or do we get hubba 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 hubba?
You don't get any hubbas? You don't get the question?
So we were. Do you want to ask anything first? Because I didn't turn on the quicker thing yet.
Well.
So we can do things like this. Def, we could define a function called e, which takes some number n and returns, say,
oh, you know.
Ah, okay. So what that means is if we say print e of 17, what it's going to do now,
it's going to take the number 17, it's going to call this function assigning n to 17, it's 17 plus 2, and that's going to be the answer. That's the thing that it's going to return back when you ask, what is the value of e of 17? So as opposed to just doing something, this actually figures something out and gives you back an answer. So these are kind of questions that you can ask now. What's e of applied to 17? Well, it gives you a number back as an answer.
And then we can actually use the result of that to do other things. So if we print e of 17, that's 19. But what if we do e of 10?
Take it step by step. There's no 17s right now. We're taking 10, sending it to this function e, which what does it do? What does it do to the whatever? It adds 2 to it. All right, so e of 10 will be 12, but now we're taking e of that, e of 12. Yeah, no, not another 10.
Oh,
from the 2, so we get 14.
So we can ask a question, we get back an answer. We can use that answer to ask another question, get back another answer, print it. So that's what we did in this case. So this example is actually a lot like the Hubba Hubba one. Well, some number of Hubbas, we don't know yet. But you have to be able to do that process. So are people cool with this? Anything, you want to ask anything else about that? Like what, does anybody know how to convert between Fahrenheit and Celsius, centigrade? It's like you take it and you subtract 32 and then you divide. All right, we won't do that then. That's a useful function. Adding 2 is not that useful function. All right, so now we're looking at this one again. It's similar, right? We define a function, it returns something on its answer. We apply it twice to something. What do we get? The answer is not 14. Strings and add them to other strings and just sticks them together. Like French and fry becomes French fry.
Oh.
So who can tell me in words what this, what D does? It takes something as input, and what does it give back? What does it produce? Lars was fixing his sleeve. I thought I was hoping that was the answer. Go ahead.
It's whatever the word is, puts a dash after it, then it puts the word.
Puts the word again. So, like, if we put in Boutros, we get?
Boutros, dash
Boutros. Boutros. Right? Which apparently is part of a name, or at least it used to be. Boutros Ghali. You know, put in cha, we get back cha cha with a dash in it. Alright, so we put in hubba, we get hubba hubba. So that's what this is going to be. D of hubba is going to be hubba hubba. But now we take hubba hubba and we put it back through that same function. What does that function do? It takes whatever comes in and puts it twice with a dash in between them. So we get hubba hubba, dash, hubba hubba. We get 4 hubbas. Yeah, Chris.
I don't understand what that plus sign is for.
So this is just like, actually you can see some examples of it right here. When you plus 2 sequences of strings, sequences of characters, 2 like words, it just sticks them together. So we plussed, if you will, cherry and pie, and we got cherry pie as the answer. So it takes whatever you get, you give it, and just gloms it together. Unless those things are numbers, in which case it really works like plus. It actually adds them together. So plus is actually doing different things depending on what you're working on.
But how come you put another plus before the second W?
So here, this is whatever word you give me is W, and we add to that, we concatenate that with a dash, in quotes, and then the word again. So we put in ha, then this will take ha, dash, ha.
Oh.
Glue them all together and get ha ha. Okay. Okay. So hubba hubba would be the natural second choice. But the first choice is hubba 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 hubba. All right, very good. All right, so this, I'm going to give you a little bit more context on this. So this is to remind you about ifs and so forth. So here's a really cute little function, simple, not very accurate function, that tries to pluralize a word. And I say tries because it doesn't always do the right thing in English, but it often does. So here's what it does. So we define a function called p that takes a word as input, and here's what it does. At first, w bracket len w minus 1 bracket, that's, you'd call that an idiom. That's like a phrase that means the last letter of the word w. In particular, Len of W is the number of letters in W. Minus 1 means we're now referring to the last letter in the string. And we're saying W bracket of that, which means tell me just the one character that's at the very end. Now, so it's saying, so given that, what is this actually saying? If the last letter is Z, then do the following. Take the word and plus it, the same plus that we've been talking about, with an E. Put an E at the end. Similarly, if it ends with an S or an X, do the same thing. And then return back as the answer, whatever W is now, with an S at the end. So some of these are going to be pluralized properly by this function, and some of them aren't. If we do P of horse or P of donkey, it's going to do something to that word and return it. And I'm saying in all but one of these cases, it'll actually produce the correct plural. Which one will it not produce the correct plural?
So did you know you could do W negative?
No, that's slick. Oh, sorry. I meant this. That's a nicer idiom. I guess that's the thing about Python. If something seems familiar yet awkward, there's probably a better way to do it. Somebody's got very good timing. All right, so what's happening here? So ignoring the ifs for a second, what this function does is it takes the word and sticks an S at the end of it, which in English, most of the time, that is how you make a plural. But the obvious counterexamples to this are if a word ends with Z or S or X, in which case, usually to make the plural, you put ES. And so that's what this does. It puts ES on the end of any word that ends with a Z, S, or X, and it puts just an S on the end otherwise. So horse becomes horses. Just sticks an S at the end. Donkey becomes donkeys. Ass becomes asses. It actually puts the ES at the end because the last letter is an S. Pony becomes ponies, just sticking S at the end. And fox becomes foxes, F-O-X-E-S, which is correct. So the only one that's not right, I guess you actually have to remember how to spell words too, is ponies. Ponies is P-O-N-I-E-S in English, even though donkeys is D-O-N-K-E-Y-S. English sucks. It's very hard to write programs that properly process English because it's all exceptions and so forth. So let's see how that went. Ponies. We have more ponies than other things, but some number of asses and foxes as well. All right. Yeah, it actually did those correctly. Fish it would do wrong. Fish, well, the plural fish is fish. Wish. Wish would do, yes, it would do fish wrong. It would do wish wrong because it would say wishes. It would just stick the S. Because sometimes when it's an H, you have to put ES. It depends on the sound. Anyway. All right, so last one. Hillis's college roommate found a better algorithm for, so this is the reading from today, for today. That last one in. Thank you. All right. So, yeah, there was nothing hard about this one. You either read that page or you didn't read that page. The answer was socks. Sock sorting. is a better algorithm for sorting stocks, and we're going to talk about that in the time that remains. People know that? Almost random. Nobody, apparently Hillis's roommate doesn't have any better friends. Everyone's pretty, that's funny. I wonder why that happened. Usually it's like, I feel like if it went over everybody's head, then it's kind of uniform across all the choices, and if everybody knows it, then it's peaked at the answer. But I've never seen this before, where it's sort of random guessing, but everybody knew it wasn't E. I have no good explanation for that. All right, so. Here we go. All right, so I found this example really fun. So here's what he said. He said, if you haven't read this yet, just, it's really just one page, so you should definitely read it, it's very cute. So what he said is, he had this roommate in college who used to sort his socks as follows. Right? He had lots and lots of socks. He would do his laundry. He would come back to the room, and he would sort his socks like this. He would reach in and grab any random sock. Then he'd reach into the basket and grab another sock. And he would say, these don't match. So he would take the second one and throw it back in, fish around again, and say, OK, good. Now we've got a match. He'd match it up, put the match aside, grab a sock, reach into the basket, find another sock. Didn't match. Reach in the basket, find another sock, didn't match. Reach in the basket, find another sock, didn't match. This is supposed to be a smart guy. He went to MIT too. Just goes to show. These are cute though. They don't match. You can see the flaw in this algorithm, I suspect. Okay, good, we have a match. You put it aside. Anyway, it should be getting maybe faster now. I had cheated that time, I felt it. No, I guess that's not really cheating if you're trying to do your logic. No? Yes. Can't tell if that matches. Yes. All right, now I'm getting really lucky. But now it should be, there's a lot fewer mistakes. Oh, boy. It always works out this well. Okay, good. All the socks are matched. Very good. All right, so so if we're trying to pair them up, reaching into the basket as few times as possible, there are different ways to do it. I just did it one way. You might think that way was bad, but it turns out I can make an even worse way. Ha ha. I'll show you. There, look, see, they're all, isn't that beautiful? They're all matched up now. So, remember, computer science is about reduction. So if we're going to try to study a problem like sock matching, we're going to have to reduce it to some other thing that we have lying around, some other partial solution to some piece of the problem. So here's the operations that I've decided are going to be, somebody else is going to implement these, and we're going to create sock sorting algorithms on top of these. So the first thing that we've got is get sock. GetSock is going to be a function that someone else is going to write that's going to reach into the basket and pull a sock and let us, you know, we hold on to that sock. Match sock 1, sock 2 is going to be a function that takes two socks and it does one of two things. So we've got two socks, sock 1 and sock 2. If they don't match, like these guys don't match, then match of sock 1, sock 2 will be false. It's asking, do these socks match? And the answer is no, it's false. On the other hand, if we have sock 1 and sock 2 and they do match, these have little jingles on them, then the answer is true, and it's going to take these socks and pair them and put them aside. So we no longer have the socks anymore. So just, as soon as we call the match function on a pair of socks that matches, they get put away and we don't have to deal with them again. All right. Another operation is replace sock. What that does is takes a sock that you've got and puts it back into the basket. And finally, empty basket is just a question, is the basket empty? I did that at the end when I turned the bag upside down to see if it was actually empty. So it's going to return true if it's empty and false if there's still socks in there. And that's the only way that we can interact with the basket and the socks is through these four operations. So we have to design an algorithm for sorting the socks on top of these guys. So here's the first algorithm. Let's see if we can read this. This is called sorter 1. Here's what sorter 1 does. First thing it does is it gets a sock, calls it X. I'll get a sock. You know, visual aids. Luckily, these are not all factory aids because I did watch them before class. All right. So
Then we get the whole sock experience. All right, so it gets a sock and calls it X. It reaches in and gets another sock and calls it Y. If not match, well, what if they did match? If they did match, they got paired up and they got put away. But if they don't match, then it's going to replace sock X, put it back in the basket. We'll fix that later. And then replace sock Y, put it back in the basket. And then we're going to call this function repeatedly until all the socks are sorted. So that's not the algorithm that I ran when I was doing the demonstration, not the algorithm that Hillis describes his roommate as following. This is an algorithm that looks like this. Actually, we'll leave these guys out. So it's got a bunch of socks in there. It's going to grab a sock. It's going to grab another sock. Oh, they matched. All right, so they matched. So we put them aside. Then it's going to reach in, grab a sock, reach in, and grab another sock. They don't match. It's going to put both of them back in the basket. It's going to try again. Get two socks, put them back. Get two socks, sock X, sock Y. Am I getting the same ones over and over again?
Are there only two socks in there?
No. See, that would be bad, wouldn't it? Sock, match. Sock. No, there were two pairs of socks, and I just kept getting one from each pair. Sock, match. Done. Okay. So that's my algorithm. Now, the first question, and this is a very important question to ask about any algorithm that you care about: will this ever work? Will this actually sort the socks, pair them up, and be done with them? Yes? No. Yes? Will this ever work?
You think it will work?
So you think it will maybe work? There are times when it will work, yeah?
Eventually.
Eventually is a good word for this. Will it always work? Same answer? Could this ever fail forever?
No.
So this will eventually sort all the socks. Why? Because there's always, in the basket, there's always some pair of socks that at random you can grab, pair up, and you'll make progress. There's always a chance that you're going to get a matching pair. The chance is very small, especially in the beginning when you've got a lot of socks. And that's why I didn't put all of them in the basket to demonstrate this.
Game Deal or No Deal.
Is it?
You ever watch it?
No. How does it go?
Just like that.
You compete in a basket, you grab two socks.
No,
not just like this.
You open a briefcase.
Oh.
And you want to hope to have a smaller number so that your odds are a bigger number.
Interesting.
In your briefcase.
And if they do they match? Does one have to be bigger than the other?
Yeah, it goes from one penny to $1 million.
You want to hope. $1 million.
And then, like, you pick a briefcase. So the briefcase you hold on to, you don't know. You hope that it's a million, but, you know, you're just picking to make sure.
And then you have to make a deal or not.
Yeah. But it just reminded me of that.
Cool, right. So it's a probabilistic algorithm, right, in that sense. That you're doing random draws, and it could work. And, in fact, this will eventually work. It just might take a very, very long time. But it will always eventually work. So how do we measure? How do we say what that really means? So Hillis asserts, and we can debate this point, but Hillis asserts that the time-consuming part of this operation is reaching into the basket. So we want to know how many times we have to call get sock. How many times we actually go into the basket and get a sock out? Let's say we've got 50 pairs of socks. How many get sock operations does this sorting algorithm do? How many times does it reach in the basket and grab a sock? So I actually wrote a program that did this, and I ran it 100 times, and I said, what was the shortest it ever worked, what was the fastest it ever worked, and what was the average over the 100 tries? So this was with 50 pairs of socks. The average was 5,051 times reaching into the basket. Be glad that I didn't demonstrate this in class. This is not so good. The most it took ever was 7,354. It never took infinity. See, that's good. And the smallest was about 3,000. So when it got lucky, it only took 3,000. All right, so we could do better than this, it turns out. This is the algorithm that Hillis described in the chapter. He says you grab two socks. If they don't match, you put one of them back and replace just that one. Why is this better? Because each time we're looking for a pair, we only have to grab one new sock instead of grabbing two new socks. Repeat until a match is found. Will this ever work?
Yes.
Okay. Will it always work?
Yes.
What are the min-max now? Okay, I'll have to tell you that. But here it is written as Python code. We're going to get a sock, call it X, get a sock, call it Y.
If they don't match, just put y back and get a new y. And keep doing, this is a while loop, just keep doing this until we actually find x's match. At which point, both x and y are matched, they're put away, and then we can do this again later. Okay, so this is going to keep running until it finds one pair, and it's going to do it by consecutively grabbing just one sock from the basket to match the one in its hand. So here's what we get. So roughly the same number of matching operations, but half the number of get socks. Because each time we're trying to see if we've got a pair, we only have to replace the one instead of the two. So 100 experiments, the mean was actually down to 2,500, the max was 3,700, 3,800, and the mid was now down to 1,600. So it's about half, factor two better than the previous one. It's about half the amount of reaches into the basket. So here's a question. When might this approach fail in the real world? When can we get really stuck? What's that?
When you lose your socks, you always lose socks.
Yeah, if the dryer is one of your socks, and you grab the match for that one, and so the whole basket doesn't have a match to the sock that's in your hand, you spend the rest of this while loop, it's on the previous slide, this while loop will go forever looking for the match for that sock. It will never complete. It will run forever. Sorter 1 doesn't quite suffer from that same difficulty, right? Because each time it's grabbing two socks, if they don't match, then one doesn't even have a match. It ends up getting thrown back into the basket. It will still never finish sorting the socks, because it'll never find the match for that one of them. But it won't get stuck in the middle of this particular loop. All right, so here's sock sorter number 3. There's another algorithm. What's this one going to do? So here, I'll read the code, and then I will demonstrate how it works. That'd be dead. Okay, so what does it do? First thing it does is it gets a sock, calls it x. Second thing it does is gets a sock, calls it y. They all started off more or less like this. Now we create an empty list that we're going to call the pile. And here's what we're going to do. While x and y don't match, we're going to put y into our pile. We're going to get a replacement for y. And we're just going to keep repeating that until we find x's match. Then, once we've matched up x and y, we take every sock in the pile and put it back in the basket. Okay? So that's what the code says. And that code actually runs as long as you have implementations for the get sock. So it's going to do this. Okay, it reaches into the basket, it gets a sock. Reaches into the basket, gets another sock. Okay, I got to get that. I think because I just unfolded the socks and tossed them in together, that's going to happen a lot, right? So, reach in, get a sock, reach in, get a sock. It didn't match, so I'm going to take Y and put it into a list called pile. Now I reach into my basket and get a new sock. Doesn't match, so I put it into the pile. Reach in the basket, get a new sock. Doesn't match, put it in the pile. Reach in the basket, get a new sock. Doesn't match, get it. Reach in here again. I found the match. So what happens when I find the match? I pair them up, I put them away, then I run through the socks in the pile, and one by one, put them back in the basket, and then we repeat this. Take sock, did match, did match, okay. Put everything in the back of the basket, did match, didn't match in the pile, matched. Back in the basket. X, Y, then that, we're done. Okay, so does this always work? Intuitively, does it seem like this ought to always work?
Yes.
All right, good. Yes, I agree with that. Wouldn't be a very good algorithm if it didn't actually work. What's the min, max, and mean of this? What's the worst thing that can happen in this case? In the other case, the worst thing that can happen is you reach in, you don't have a match, you put it back in the basket, and that can happen for a very, very long time, unboundedly long time. What's the worst that can happen now? I'm trying to find, like I grab one of the socks, and now how many socks do I have to sift through before I will definitely find a match for this one? Can it go forever? Well, it doesn't have a match yet, but if the match is really in here, Each time I reach in here, if I don't get the match, I put it aside, and the basket gets one smaller. There's one fewer sock to choose from. So by the time I've gone through all these socks, I have to have found the match. And what that does is it actually means that we have the worst case ends up being a lot better now. And it turns out that, again, it's about half or twice as good as the previous one. It takes half the number of draws from the basket. Both will grab a random sock and go through the basket looking for its mate. But this time, we never check the same sock twice. Once it's been checked, we can set it aside. So for early 100 experiments, the mean now is down to 1,300, the max was 1,700, and the min is now under 1,000. So we just keep getting better and better. So, all right, I think I have time to actually finish this lecture, so I'm going to do that. I'm going to tell you the fourth one. This is a bit more complicated looking, but this actually works. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to make a pile, grab a sock, look for its mate in the pile. If found, shrink the pile. If not, add to the pile. So this is the new plan. This is probably you being clever people. This is probably how you sort yourselves. Reach into the basket, get a sock, put it down on the table. Reach into the basket, get a sock, put it on the table. Reach into the basket, get a sock. Make sure it's not already on the match. Isn't already on the table. Compare. If it's not, you put it on the table too. Go again. Does it match the first one? No. Does it match the second one? No. Does it match the third one? Yes. Take it off the table. We got a pair. Reach in the basket. Match, no. Reach in the basket. Match, yes, we have a pair. Pair it, now we've got two on the table again, one on the floor. This one's prepared. Anyway, what's going on here is we have this pile. While the basket is not empty, we get a sock from the basket. We then run through everything in the pile and check to see if it matched one of the ones in the pile. If not, then we add it to the pile and we keep doing this. If we find its match in the pile, we take that one out of the pile, make the pair, and get rid of it. So what's nice about this? What's the absolute smallest number of times that we need to reach in the basket? Say we've got, 50 pairs of socks. How many times do we reach into the basket to take a sock out in the best case? If we're really lucky. 50 pairs of socks.
25.
No, we've got 50 pairs of socks.
50.
50 pairs of socks, how many socks is that?
Oh, 100.
100 socks! Thank you. All right, we've got 100 socks in the basket. At best, we reach in and we take them all out, one after the other. But what about in the worst case now? What's the worst that can happen? How many times do we pull socks out of the basket? Well, every sock gets pulled out of the basket how many times? Once. So no matter what we do in this case, it will reach into the basket 100 times. So the min, max, and average is all 100, which is much better than all the other ones. So to wrap up, we have a notion of time. They're really different. So you want to choose good algorithms. Great. OK. So knowing which sock routine works best for 50 socks is kind of nice, but not very general. What we're going to talk about next time is how do you do these kinds of analyses more generally? So you have an idea, you have different kinds of data you're going to run it on. How do we say this algorithm is better than the other algorithm? So look at Hilda's chapter 5, section 2. It's after the little story about the socks. He starts talking about the growth rate, and that's what the next opportunity is. Thank you.